Fritz Berger and bloodandfaith.com. I want to talk a little bit about the foundations of Christian civilization and also about the war in Europe. Let's start off with the more complex one. The war in Europe is developing at a rate that I didn't expect. I wouldn't have guessed in February that more than the two parties would be so heavily engaged. I shouldn't be surprised, but I am surprised. A number of European countries are openly bragging about the arms they're supplying to the Ukrainians. And one country even said, hey, if they use these directly against Russia, that's fine with us. The American Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State just visited Kiev, spoke with the leader of Ukraine, voiced full-throated support, and even claimed that they wanted to, I think it was Lloyd Austin, claimed that they wanted to weaken Russia so much that they're never in a position to threaten other countries again. That coupled with some of the statements that could lead one to believe that there's a policy of regime change. Interesting. I'm speaking particularly of senators who've called for Putin's assassination. Interesting. Now, I'm not saying this is the right policy. Not saying it's the wrong policy. I'm saying this is what's been talked about. Stepping outside of it, because I'm not a party to it. Well, I guess I am, and since I'm an American. Ouch. That's a hard thought to think about. I am an American. I do live in America. My primary interest is the health and safety of my own land, my own country. The best way, I think, theologically to understand this is to go back and look at the beasts. In the Bible, there's many beasts. Daniel, there's several beasts. There's several stories about beasts. And these were representations of international empires. And they didn't like each other, and they fought, and they didn't get along. Daniel chapter 7 is probably the best example of it. There's four beasts there that arise from the earth, and they fight, and they're jealous, and they're power-hungry, and they clash. There's another story in the Daniel about that, too. I don't know if I have my thumbs are so quick that I can even pull it up. But there's the story of the ram and the goat that are fighting. Yes, the ram and the goat. So there's two others. The shaggy goat and the ram. And they're fighting. These are international empires. Of course, we see that again in the Revelation. There's a beast that rises from the seas. And I'm less interested in identifying who those people are than just to lay down the pattern. To me, this is the more interesting question. From the Holy Scriptures emerges patterns and narratives and ways to understand things. I don't need to put a name or a tag on it. I can simply observe that, hey, the beasts like to fight. They're jealous of power, and they get engaged, and one wins, one loses. And sometimes they resurrect. And perhaps I can understand, for me, in my humble theological mind, I can understand the current contest right now in Europe as a struggle between beasts. And we don't know how it comes out. I completely disagree with the idea that we live in a rational, orderly world. Any perusal of the newspapers anywhere around the world shows that we live in a completely irrational world where people do crazy things all the time. From your neighbors, school kids, adults, movie stars. How about movie stars? Politicians, famous newscasters. Do we really think the people that run the world are any smarter? I mean, go look at the shenanigans of the billionaires. These are the people in charge. Is it really a system? The political scientists will tell you that it is. The lawyers will tell you it is. Says we're going to have order out of chaos, and we're going to have a system where it's all going to work just fine. Trust us. Don't ever trust them. They're liars. Anyway, we've got this thing in Europe, this war in Europe that's expanded rapidly, I think, and if you listen to what the Russians have to say, they're concerned about how much further it can expand. We'll just see. We'll see what happens. I wish the best for my country. I wish the best for all the countries involved. it's almost like watching a movie. You know, you're watching a movie, there's a lot of tension, there's this strife between the main character and the villain, and you go, what's going to happen? Who's going to win? I feel that way with this war with Russia. I feel like, you know, we've yet to see all the special effects that are going to come out of this struggle. And that's not necessarily a good thing, because this is not a movie. You can't push pause. You can't push rewind. So we'll have to see about that. Break on that one. I wrote a couple articles, put them up at bloodandfaith.com. And for me, I'm really getting to the foundation of Christian civilization. Well, any civilization for that matter. What do I mean by civilization? A large culture, a way of understanding the world that guides the minds of millions and billions of people in a similar direction. This isn't about what type of constitution you have. This isn't about which particular law you make. This isn't about whether you have a constitutional democracy or democratic constitution or a republic or a monarchy, for that matter, or a tribal council. How do you understand the world? What's real? What's not real? What's fake news? What's not fake news? And how do you determine it? And the answer to that, always, for all civilizations, pagan, Christian, you name it, it emerges out of the things we read and consume with our mind and what we are taught. It emerges from our intellectual leaders, our philosophical leaders, our religious leaders, and in my mind, all those three are the same. There's no difference between philosophy and religion and an intellectual life. It's all the same. And if you've earned your PhD in the last 20, 30 years, you probably have come to the same conclusion yourself. You understand that we live in a world of suppositions, and that we begin by supposing things, and we reason up to there. What are your suppositions? What are your baseline beliefs about what is true and real in the world? The main genre of thought that has been propagated in the West since the rise of French atheism, some call it the Enlightenment, the darkening, has been one of, you know, we reduce God to mere superstition. This is the foundation of Marxism. It's the foundation of evolution. God was just an invention to explain things that we can't explain. Now that we've discarded that superstition, we're going to create a new philosophy, a new religion, a new worldview that is rational, that will explain our existence. And of course, these new prophets, they claim that it's scientific, but it's not, because when I went through science classes in 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, college, you were taught that the scientific method begins with a theory. You propose a theory, and then you test the theory over and over and over and over. You test that theory to see if it stands up. And if it does, okay, we can accept it as scientific truth. No one has done that with the fundamental assumptions of the world we live in. Nobody has proven that there is no God. That's the scientific method. If you're going to begin with an assumption and you assume there's no God, that's fine, but that's not a scientific assumption, because you can't test it. You can't test it. It's a presupposition. You presuppose that. You suppose that before you begin your thoughts about the world. That's a religious idea. Oh, but we can't call it religious because they're not religion, right? It's the same thing. It's presuppositional thought. If you want to read a good book on that, Banson. What's the name of his book? It'll come to me. But fabulous. The Theonomy and Christian Ethics, I think it is. I have an original copy of that from decades ago. I think it's a collector's item now. Theonomy and Christian Ethics by Banson, B-A-H-N-S-E-N, I believe it is. But it's presuppositional thought. It's suppositional thought. You assume things first, and you reason up from there. There was a thinker long ago, it could have been Rene Descartes, who said, you know, get rid of all your suppositions and then reason up with pure logic. Well, we've realized a few centuries later that that's not possible. It's simply intellectually not possible. And we understand now that language is a fundamental component of reason and logic. And if you don't believe that, just imagine the binary numbering system that you use with your computer. It's either on or it's off. That is pure logic. That is pure rationality. And binary numbers are a language. Anytime you have verbs in a language, well, that's pretty logical, especially with to be. It either is or it is not. That's fairly binary. And it becomes hard to have a logical language if there is no word for it to be. Because you don't know what you're dealing with. You have no idea what you're dealing with. It either exists or it doesn't exist. You can't have it both ways. Once it's both ways, well, you're in confusion. You're in mass confusion. Thus it is with the larger picture over the philosophy of a civilization. And the secular civilization that we have today, it supposes there is no God. And since there's no God, they have to invent a myth that explains how we got here. And their myth is billions and billions of years ago, so long ago that it is literally unimaginable, which works for them because people really can't imagine it. It's beyond their comprehension, so they just believe it, but they can't comprehend it. That's part of the trick. In an incomprehensible length of time ago, everything popped into being. And there's no scientific explanation for that. They certainly can't reproduce that. They can't test that. They simply presuppose it. And then out of that great big bang, we presuppose that matter, without design or work, by chance, arranges itself in an increasingly complex matter over time. Utterly unscientific. There's nothing scientific about that. If anything, it contradicts what we have tested and proven. That's why we have the second law of thermodynamics. Things go from a higher state of order to a lower state of order over time. They decompose. They don't compose. They decompose. So the whole idea of our existence myth and natural evolution and the changes between kinds, even the changes between kinds, those are not scientific. That those are theories they have never been able to test or prove. So it's a religion. We live in a religion, we live in a cult. How are we so convinced that this cult is true? We have teachers and we have books. Like I said, this isn't super, super complicated. I'll give you a book that probably all of you have read because you're all college educated. Karl Marx, The Communist Revolution. It's a great book for professors to assign undergraduates. You know, I don't think it's 100 pages long, 50 pages. I don't know how many times I've had to read it. It's been assigned in my classes over the years. Interesting that I was assigned The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx, but never the first book of Moses. Interesting. This is important, guys. Why is it that I was assigned the Communist Revolution, but never the first book of Moses, never to read the book of Moses? It's because we're in a religion, and we go to university. University is a cathedral. The professors are the prophets and the priests of the religion. And a Christian may have the Bible. They have their own scriptures. Scripture just means writing, and they're going to say, these are the holy books of our religion. Karl Marx, Freud, Marcuse, Lukács, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, Darwin, read these prophetic books. These are the holy books, they say. But of course, they don't believe in anything holy, so they said, well, read this. And they worship these books and they worship these prophets and they teach and they write their own holy scriptures as they write their academic journals. And they say, we're not a religion, we're science. And it's all lies, man. It's all lies. The scientific method says you create a theory and you test it. You go experiment with it over and over and over again until you determine that this is the only way it can be. They've just invented things out of whole cloth. They've written new scriptures, and they've taught it to a civilization. We've already been through the great falling away. We've already been through the great falling away. I've mentioned that more than once. If you want to rebuild Christian civilization, all we have to do is reverse what they've done. Centuries ago, a few centuries ago, the great universities in Christendom, here's another example of why, how we've been converted. It used to be called Christendom. Europe was called Christendom, period. It wasn't the West, it was Christendom. Oh, but we can't, you know, that has religious connotation, so we'll invent something new and call it the West. That's proof right there that the cult took over. But these universities, Yale and Harvard and Cambridge and Oxford, they were set up and run by ministers of the gospel. Harvard explicitly was set up to train Protestant ministers of the gospel. To get into Harvard, you had to speak some Greek and Latin and Hebrew, at least one of those three, just to get in. Well, I never heard of that. Well, why is that? Because that's forbidden knowledge by your religion. It's forbidden knowledge by your religion. And where did the Bible go in all this? Oh, that's just a little silly little religious book. Really? Is that right? And yours isn't. I had to read Frederick Engels' book on the origin of the family. You know, that was assigned reading too, by the way. And he utterly tears apart the origins of the society, the family, and the state. And in his mind, he wants to set people free, and all he's done is enslave people to lies. But he admits in there, look, the definition of the family over the centuries is up until now, he said, has been, it comes out of the five books of Moses. Well, no kidding. No kidding. How about the first book of Moses? They recognize that. They acknowledge that. And so they replace the book of Genesis with the origin of the family in the Communist Manifesto, in Das Kapital, and then all the subsidiary apostles and prophets of Marxism and atheism and secularism. So what do we need to do? Reverse it. Reverse it. And what I would like to do, and well, this is why I'm talking about how I'm doing. Look, it's not hard to contemplate a reversible. When you understand the bankruptcy of the current atheistic system, it ought to be replaced. And the people that can replace it are the Christians. So we can build a whole, healthy, intellectually sound, and Christian civilization with our monarch, Jesus Christ. So those are articles, a couple short ones. I think I put them out on the podcast too. You can read them. And up at bloodandfaith.com. And that's it for this evening. A little short one. Fritz Bergen, bloodandfaith.com.